Yes, once again, you're listening to the hour of the time, and I'm still William Cooper. Folks, on December the 10th, big do down in Phoenix, and it's called Campaign USA. I want to pause and just tell you just a little bit about it before we continue with what we began on Friday night. This is put on by the Foundation of America, and you can call them for information at 1-800-REFOUND. That's spelled REFOUND. 1-800-REFOUND. Now, here are a list of the speakers: Red Beckman, Dr. Gene Schroeder, John B. Nelson, and yours truly, William Cooper. Those are all the speakers that will be there. Mr. Nelson, whom I believe everybody listening to this broadcast should make a special attempt to get to Phoenix just to listen to this man. And if you can, find out where he's conducting his workshops and attend them. I believe it's that important. December 10th, 1994, Mesa, Arizona. For information, call 1-800-REFOUND. John Nelson is going to talk on the Law of Nations, and he's going to reveal the fundamental principles upon which social and political compacts are formed. He currently holds the title of General Advocate Liaison and is working directly with the Kingdom of Hawaii, and he'll explain the essential elements which are necessary to the recognition and function of a valid society, nation, or state. The fundamental principles upon which men ordain and establish social compacts has been long known and recognized. The rise and decline have been continually attributed to the faithful observance or corruption of these same necessary principles, ladies and gentlemen. These fundamental principles are called the Law of Nations. The Declaration of Resolves of the First Continental Congress, October 14, 1774, the Declaration of the Cause and Necessity of Taking Up Arms, July 6, 1775, and the Declaration of Independence of July 4, 1776, claimed the cause, right, and duty of the people upon breach of public trust in violation of the Law of Nations. And I'm not going to tell you any more because I want you to be there and hear it. You need to hear it. You have to know who you are, what you're a part of, what you're dealing with, what you've lost, and how to get it back. And all of us are going to be telling you these things, I hope. Let me see. Red Beckman, he wrote the book about the law that never was. And Dr. Schroeder is the driving force behind the American agricultural movement. And you need to listen to them, too. But really, the most important person that's going to be there, as far as I'm concerned, is John Nelson. And I'm going to talk about the history and the milestone events leading to the destruction of sovereignty of the United States of America. I'm going to specifically focus upon the betrayal of America by the two-party system and demonstrate that the march toward global government has continued uninterrupted throughout the administrations of Democrats and Republicans. I'm going to reveal that although the plan for world domination may have begun as a conspiracy, it is not a conspiracy today under the legal definition of that term. All is in the open, folks, and has been easily documented. And those of you who have obtained our treason documents know that. And we have compiled many more beyond that number, which will be published in book form soon. I'm going to explain why the third parties in existence, in effect, the libertarian, populist, Perot movement, etc., have failed, and exactly why their failure notwithstanding, a strong grassroots winning third party must emerge. Not can, but must. It must be a party that uplifts and inspires and includes all Americans. It must be a party based upon individual liberty and responsibility. And I'll clearly demonstrate that that third party can only be the Constitution Party. The others have serious defects, serious faults, and they've all had many, many years to succeed, and yet they have failed. They have failed to inspire the American people. December 10th in Mesa, Arizona, which is part of Phoenix, I say, people in Mesa say they're a separate city. Tell me that from an airplane looking down, folks. It's all the same. So call 1-800-REFOUND for information and be there. Don't forget to be there. Also, for Christmas, I really can't afford to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. You see, I have to buy these books myself. I'm not self-published. But for Christmas, what I would like for each and every person listening to this broadcast to do is buy a copy of my book and give it to someone as a Christmas present. If you can buy two and give them as Christmas presents. If you can buy three or four, that's even better. We must wake up more people, and my book is the only one that's ever put it all together where people read it and understand it and know what they've got their hands on. It's entitled Behold a Pale Horse. For Christmas, for members, either CAGI or Intelligence Service, $15 per copy. And folks, I'm eating it. Believe me, it costs $25 retail. But this is the only way we can get it out. If this is the only way, this is what we'll do. $15 per copy for members. Buy as many as you can afford. Give them away as Christmas presents. For everybody else, $18.50. Because I've got to put something in my daughter's stocking. Okay? $18.50 for non-members. For members, I'm giving it to you, $15 a copy. That's post-paid, folks. And believe me, when I say I'm eating it, I mean it. I'm eating it. But you know my goal is to wake the sheeple, empower the people, and try to save freedom for the world. And if that book will do it, then you can have it. Okay, folks, don't go away. I'll be right back. The suppressed findings of the United States space program, the NASA military cover-up. What you learned Friday was the tip of the iceberg, and for those of you who were curious and got out your calculators and began to do some figures beyond where we went, based upon what you learned that night, you already know what I'm going to tell you tonight in the first part of this program. And then we're going to go into some other ones. Now, This broadcast is based upon my research, the research of the Intelligence Service, the Citizens Agency for Joint Intelligence, and a lot of it simply because you all think I'm nuts. A lot of it comes directly from a book entitled Moongate by William L. Bryan II. Find it if you can and read it. You need it for your own library, for NASA has lied to the world about the space program. Not only NASA, but the United States government, the military, everybody. As you will continue to discover by listening to the Hour of the Time, because nowhere else will you learn these things. Everywhere else, you get what they want you to know. And that's all you ever get. We left off reading a quote from an article in Time magazine where they said at a point 43,495 miles from the moon, lunar gravity exerted a force equal to the gravity of the Earth, then some 200,000 miles distant. How can that be? You might be surprised. I was, concerning this statement, since the neutral point distances that we talked about last Friday night were all 20,000 to 25,000 miles from the moon. Now, it might seem that time has made an error. Therefore, we're going to look at some other sources to find out. Were they coming off the cuff, or were they telling us what they had been told? In the 1969 edition of History of Rocketry and Space Travel by Wernher von Braun and Frederick I. Ordway III, the following statement is made concerning Apollo 11. Quote, the approach to the moon was so precise that the mid-course correction scheduled for 8:26 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the 19th was canceled. At a distance of 43,495 miles from the moon, Apollo 11 passed the so-called neutral point, beyond which the lunar gravitational field dominated that of Earth. Consequently, the spacecraft, which had been gradually losing speed on its long coast away from Earth, now began to accelerate. End quote. There is no better source than Wernher von Braun. Note that the precision of the flight was so great that the mid-course correction was not needed. In actuality, they had planned it right down to the exact mile at the exact moment in space. In addition, the neutral point distance is given to the nearest mile in degrees exactly with the value given by Time magazine, which means Time magazine's source was NASA itself, and it had to come from the highest levels. Another reputable source is the Encyclopedia Britannica. This organization generally publishes information which is accepted by orthodox scientists, and therefore, their claim for the neutral point distance should be in close agreement with Wernher von Braun. In reference to Apollo 11, the Britannica stated the following in the 1973 printing within the topic Space Exploration, and I quote, consideration of the actual dynamics of the Apollo trajectory will review the statements made above. The Apollo 11 spacecraft had been in Earth orbit at 118.5 miles altitude, traveling at 17,427 miles per hour. By firing the rocket motor at the exact moment when the spacecraft was precisely aligned along the proper trajectory, the velocity was increased to 24,200 miles per hour. Because the Earth's gravitational pull continued to act upon the spacecraft during its 2 3/4 day, or 64-hour journey toward the moon, the spacecraft velocity, with respect to the Earth, dwindled to 2,040 miles per hour at a distance of 39,000 miles from the moon. At this point, lunar gravitational attraction became greater than the Earth's, and the spacecraft commenced accelerating as it swung toward and around the far side of the moon, reaching a speed of 5,225 miles per hour. By firing the spacecraft rocket propulsion system, the velocity was reduced to 3,680 miles per hour, and the spacecraft entered an elliptical orbit about the moon, end quote. Now here, The distance is 39,000 miles, which is still close to the values given by Time magazine and von Braun. The reader may recall that in Chapter 2, reference was made to the 1960 printing of the Encyclopedia Britannica, which listed the neutral point distance as 19 moon radii, or 20,520 miles from the moon. So in this case, ladies and gentlemen, the distance discrepancy is between different printings of the same source. In a book entitled We Reached the Moon, Wilford indicated that the spacecraft entered the lunar sphere of gravitational influence at about 38,900 miles from the moon. In Footprints on the Moon, written in 1969 by the writers and editors of the Associated Press, the neutral point is described as follows. Quote, Friday, day 3 of the mission, found Apollo 11 at the apex of that long gravitational hill between Earth and the moon. At 1:12 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, the nose-to-nose spaceships passed the milestone where the moon's gravity becomes the more important influence. The astronauts were 214,000 miles from the Earth, only 38,000 miles from their rendezvous with the moon, leading their target like a hunter leads a duck, end quote. Now, you might already recognize the obvious inconsistencies between the quoted figures, which vary between 38,000 and 43,495 miles. Still, ladies and gentlemen, even with that discrepancy, they are all much greater than the earlier quoted 20,000 to 25,000 miles. Many different values are given with varying degrees of precision, yet they still lie within a range which is radically different from pre-Apollo calculations, and there is no way to get around the discrepancy between the conventional pre-Apollo distances of 20,000 to 25,000 miles and the post-Apollo range of 38,000 to 43,495 miles. Even though the Earth-to-Moon distance varies between 200 and 21,463 miles and 252,710 miles, and spacecraft do not travel in a straight line between the Earth and Moon. This still does not explain the neutral point distance discrepancy. You see, the logical conclusion is that the latest neutral point information reached the general public at about the time of the first Apollo lunar landing in 1969, even though it was determined as far back as 1959 from early lunar probes. Clearly, ladies and gentlemen, this discrepancy has not been pointed out to the public until now. To this day, the status quo of science and government alludes to the 1/6 gravity of the lunar surface, which cannot possibly be with these new figures, unless it is representative of a neutral point less than 25,193 miles from the moon, which, according to NASA, it is not. Therefore, the neutral point discrepancy and its implications must be placed under a microscope. And that's exactly what we're doing. You see, the moon's surface gravity was calculated with the new figures presented above, using the standard inverse square law technique. Since the radii of the Earth and Moon, the neutral point distance, and the Earth's surface gravity are known, the Moon's surface gravity is easily determined. And some of you have already done it, I know, because you've sent me faxes. The technique does not require a knowledge of the Moon's mass or the Earth's mass as Newton's law of gravitation does. The only aspect of Newton's law of gravitation, which seems to be valid, folks, at this time, is the inverse square law nature of gravity. Therefore, since the Earth's pull equals the Moon's pull at the neutral point, the inverse square law enables the pull of gravity at the Moon's surface to be determined easily. The technical derivation is presented in the back of this book in Appendix B. For those of you who can get this book and look it up, it's all worked out. The result is that the moon's surface gravity is 64% of the Earth's surface gravity, not the 1/6 or 16.7% value predicted by Newton's law of universal gravitation. Raise your eyebrows. Well, it should, because I've been telling you these things all along. When the reader stops to consider that the 43,495-mile figure represents the measured value of the neutral point distance supplied to us by official sources, in effect, Wernher von Braun, and if he didn't know, nobody does, an annoying paradox then arises. Why would experts release this information and yet continue to tell us that the moon's gravity is 1/6 Earth's, ignoring all the pre-Apollo references to the neutral point distance of less than 25,000 miles, yet using the figure of the moon's gravity as if it were, ignoring the new figure and all the while perpetrating the lie? Additional information to come, ladies and gentlemen, suggests that the moon's gravity might even be higher than 64% of Earth. In consideration of what appears to be a cover-up and the sensitivity of the neutral point distance to slight variations in lunar gravity, NASA could have easily given the public understated figures. But if the neutral point is 43,495 miles from the moon, the surface gravity is 64% of Earth's, shifting the neutral point out 8,500 miles to around 52,000 miles from the moon has the same effect of increasing the moon's surface gravity to the very same value as Earth's. The discrepancies that you're going to learn as we continue in this Hour of the Time broadcast involve the orbital period of spaceships around the moon and velocities attained by spaceships reaching the moon from the neutral point. You see, the publicized period and velocity values are not supportive of a 43,495-mile neutral point distance from the moon. Instead, they support the old neutral point distances and the moon's weak 1/6 gravity. Therefore, official information is inconsistent and contradictory, indicating a serious cover-up. The question is why the real neutral point distance leaked out. Did some of the NASA people try to sabotage the cover-up and let us know that something is not right with the Emperor's new clothes? Writers who covered the Apollo missions, ladies and gentlemen, consistently reported that the spacecraft were traveling less than 6,000 miles per hour when they reached the moon. And this was after they had passed the neutral point, traveling slightly more than 2,000 miles per hour, according to statistics furnished by NASA. Now, we've not seen calculation by any of the writers which derived the velocity attained at the time the spacecraft reached the moon. But it's reasonable to assume that NASA directly or indirectly supplied the information. And when we go back and check the press releases and the technical data supplied by NASA, this becomes evident. A glaring inconsistency arises when the facts and figures are examined, and a great lie is exposed. To begin with, the 43,495-mile neutral point distance and 1/6 gravity are incompatible, as I have already explained. In Space Frontier, written in 1971, Wernher von Braun gave the velocities of Apollo 8 at the neutral point and when it reached the moon as 2,200 miles per hour and 5,700 miles per hour, respectively. In the same discussion, he mentioned that lunar gravity took over at a point 38,900 miles from the moon, where the craft began speeding up again. So in working out the mathematics of velocity and going from the neutral point to the moon, the only way the craft could reach the moon, traveling less than 6,000 miles per hour, would be if 1/6 gravity is again assumed. If 1/6 gravity is assumed, the neutral point is around 24,000 miles from the moon, not 38,900. But why would Wernher von Braun lie about this? Because if this is true, then certainly he did. The craft would continue to lose velocity in its coast from the Earth until it reached a point about 24,000 miles from the moon. But this is not what these figures von Braun referenced said. You see, either the greater neutral point distance is correct with its high lunar gravity ramifications, or the greater neutral point distance is wrong and 1/6 gravity exists on the moon. Now, why did Wernher von Braun, the premier space scientist of NASA, publish this conflicting information? Well, I'm going to give you the following in an effort to show the ramifications of a high lunar gravity on the velocity when reaching the moon. 1/6 lunar gravity would accelerate the craft to a velocity of somewhat less than 6,000 miles per hour, while a 64% lunar gravity would boost the final velocity considerably higher. The deviation of final velocity is given using the 64% lunar gravity required by the 43,495-mile neutral point distance. And this, folks, also assumes that the initial velocity at that point is the 2,200 miles per hour claimed. This yields a final velocity of over 10,000 miles per hour. The discrepancy between the velocity demanded by 43,495-mile neutral point, hence a high lunar gravity, and the claimed value of 5,700 miles per hour is over 4,000 miles per hour. And before we get into a discussion of orbital velocity, an argument has to be presented which clearly shows that the neutral point distance is in the vicinity of the 40,000-mile mark. You see, on the Apollo 8 flight, the spacecraft reached the neutral point, allegedly 38,900 miles from the moon, traveling 2,200 miles per hour, at 55 hours 39 minutes into the mission. At 68 hours 57 minutes, it had reached the moon, traveling less than 6,000 miles per hour. Therefore, the distance was covered in 13 hours 18 minutes. If the neutral point were really 24,000 miles from the moon, the ship's average velocity would have been about 2,441 miles per hour, and the trip would only have taken about 9 hours and 50 minutes. Again, the big lie is exposed clearly. The times given by NASA support the greater neutral point distance, hence the moon's high gravity. And a detailed analysis of flight times provides additional confirmation of the moon's high gravity. If the moon had but 1/6 of the Earth's surface gravity, the Apollo 8 spacecraft would have continued to lose velocity until it reached the 24,000-mile mark. At that point, it would have begun to accelerate, reaching a final velocity of about 5,540 miles per hour at the moon. If it were traveling 2,200 miles per hour, 38,900 miles from the moon, its time of flight would have been 16 hours 44 minutes with the assumption of 1/6 gravity. Now this represents a discrepancy of over 3 hours from the NASA reported time of 13 hours and 18 minutes. The only way to account for the shorter flight time claimed by NASA is to assign a higher average velocity and final velocity to the spacecraft. So, folks, with the assumption of a 64% lunar gravity, the flight time is calculated to be 13 hours 47 minutes, which is very close to the NASA claim of 13 hours and 18 minutes. This analysis definitely shows that the NASA-supplied information contradicts itself. The flight times and neutral point distances are indicative of a high lunar gravity. Yet NASA continues to publicize the weak 1/6 gravity condition on the moon, and with all those scientists, they know beyond any shadow of a doubt that they're telling the public of the world a blatant, pre-calculated lie. Ah, yes, that's much better. The hour of the time is brought to you, ladies and gentlemen, by Swiss America Trading. Can't find better people to deal with when you're talking about your money. And it's hard to find anybody that'll give you a buyback privilege and takes everything so that nothing underhanded could possibly occur. It's absolutely not going to happen. Not only that, but over the period of time that we've been together, ever since they first contacted me wanting to sponsor this broadcast, I've become friends with quite a few of the people down there at Swiss America Trading, especially Gene Miller and Craig Smith and Steve and Joanne and a lot of other of the employees. They care about this broadcast. They care about the truth. They care about the message that you're getting. You see, they could go and sponsor a whole bunch of other little programs across the board and just spread their advertising out everywhere. But they know what I know and what you have come to know if you've been listening with even half a brain, like Rush does. I mean, doesn't he sit on half of his? Folks, we're in a bad situation, and it's not getting any better. Every prediction that I've ever made, with the exception of Manuel Noriega sitting in an American prison right now, has come true. That's one that I didn't think I'd ever see happen, because it just violated all the laws of the nation and of international treaties, all of the things that had existed before came tumbling down when we sent our troops down to capture the leader of another nation, another sovereign nation. That indicated to me that they're way ahead of where we thought that they would be at that time, which means impending disaster is a lot closer to us than we dreamed also. And if you're looking around you, you can see evidence of that every single day. Something's going to happen. And it's going to happen not far off in the future. And I think when it does happen, it's going to be way beyond the scope of most people's ability to deal with it. And I sincerely think a lot of people are just going to go insane at that time and won't ever recover. Because in order to bring about their world government, the destruction that they have to accomplish here are so far out of the belief structure of the average American person that even with a mountain of proof, we couldn't convince them to prepare for it. But the listeners of the Hour of the Time have been learning and researching and delving for a long, long time. And most of you out there are awake. You know what's happening. Even if you don't know exactly what's coming, you have a good suspicion. And I hope that you're all preparing. I want you to call 1-800-289-2646 and just talk to the people at Swiss America Trading. Whether or not you obtain any precious metals, that's up to you. But at least hear what they have to say. And if you have an idea, tell them your idea so that they can help you make it come true. And do it now, folks. We all tend to procrastinate. All of us. There's going to come a day when you're going to say, oh, I should have done it. And, of course, it'll be too late. 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You'll be glad that you did. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if the moon had 1/6 of the Earth's gravity, a satellite or spacecraft orbiting the moon would have a very low orbital velocity. And this is simply because the orbital velocity offsets the pull of gravity. If the gravity pull is less, the velocity required to maintain orbit is less. In other words, the tendency to fall is reduced, so the satellite can continue to orbit with less speed. At 1/6 gravity, a satellite orbiting the moon at an altitude of 70 miles would only be traveling 3,655 miles per hour. However, with a lunar gravity 64% of Earth's, the orbital velocity at the same height would be 7,163 miles per hour, or nearly double the value claimed. In the Encyclopedia Britannica, within the subject entitled Space Exploration, Apollo 11 reached the moon traveling 5,225 miles per hour and had to reduce its velocity to 3,680 miles per hour to assume an elliptical orbit. With a 64% lunar gravity, the spaceship would drop like a rock with such a low velocity and would crash into the moon. And yet that's what the figures tell us that the moon gravity is. So it's evident that with a high lunar gravity, the braking maneuver of the Apollo crafts would only have to reduce the 10,000 mile plus per hour velocity to 7,163 miles per hour to assume orbit. This orbital velocity indicates that the craft would circle the moon every 60 minutes instead of one orbit every 2 hours. What's going on here? The knowledge of these orbital periods must have been known by the mission control people, because during a certain percentage of every orbit, communication with the orbiting command module, or CM as it was called, is cut off when the craft passes behind the moon. That is, if it ever did, if it ever even went. The communication blackout allegedly lasted for 50 minutes out of every 120-minute orbit. You see, everything conflicts. All of their figures do not jive with each other. The velocity and communication blackout time are derived based on the 70-mile-high orbit. With a 64% gravity, the blackout time would only be 24 minutes. Now, if this situation occurred, fairly tight security measures must have been employed to suppress information from the public, as long as the only means to monitor the astronauts' activities were through mission control. Only a relatively small number of people would actually be aware of the situation, unless someone with a brain sat down with a calculator and figured it out. The vast majority of NASA people could still be kept in the dark if they could only be convinced not to question the figures. If such were the case, the tightest security area would be mission control, and the information presented indicates this. You see, John Noble Wilford covered the Apollo missions for the New York Times. In a book entitled We Reached the Moon, he discussed the Apollo program in considerable detail, along with his experiences in working with NASA. The following information was derived from his book regarding the fire that killed Grissom, Chaffee, and White. He mentioned that Houston used the word gruesome to describe the tape recordings in a phone call to NASA headquarters. However, NASA officials would not admit that they knew about the tape evidence until after Wilford wrote a story in the New York Times on Tuesday, January 31st. This incident was symptomatic of the lack of candor which the public and Congress later found NASA to be guilty of. During the weekend of the fire, reporters constantly received vague and evasive replies to their questions, which made them remember Gemini 8. On Gemini 8, the capsule went out of control, and the communication tapes made during the crisis were withheld because NASA believed that the astronauts' voice level might have given a false impression of their behavior. They were later released, and assuming that they were complete, the astronauts had handled themselves with great control, providing that they were the original tapes, which we have no way of knowing. Reporters subsequently began to refer to the NASA initials as meaning, quote, never a straight answer, end quote. In the book entitled The Voyages of Apollo, The Exploration of the Moon, Richard Lewis explained what the situation was at Mission Control during Apollo 12. The following is a summary of his account. At midnight, the glass viewing room behind the Mission Control consoles was filled with VIPs, such as Administrator Payne, his deputy George M. Lowe, the astronauts Armstrong, Aldrin, and Borman. C. Stark Draper, director of the Instrumentation Laboratory of MIT, where the Apollo Inertial Guidance System was developed, and Wernher von Braun. However, not a single member of the news media was present. Newsmen had not been allowed in Mission Control since the policy was established in Project Mercury, supposedly to prevent uncontrolled disclosure in the event of a disaster. This continued until late in Apollo, when a press pool representative was finally admitted to the viewing chamber at the Johnson Space Center. In light of information presented on this broadcast so far, it seems much more than coincidental that such tight security measures were employed. Clearly, in lieu of the NASA charter, the public received carefully chosen information, some of which was true, and a great deal of which must have been totally fabricated based on the old concept of the moon's 1/6 gravity. And all the while, they should have been revealing the results of the research and the findings of the missions according to their charter and according to the law, without any censorship whatsoever. As the discrepancies encountered on the way to the moon become evident to those of you listening, it brings the spacecraft into lunar orbit. The next step is to consider the ramifications of a high lunar gravity on the fuel requirements of the lunar descent and ascent vehicles. And this, ladies and gentlemen, opens up a whole new chamber of horrors. To escape from the surface of a planet into space, or to orbit around it, a space vehicle must be lifted to orbital height and be traveling a certain minimum speed. This requires energy to overcome the continuous pull of the gravitational field and to increase the vehicle's kinetic energy. You may recall, ladies and gentlemen, that the Apollo launch rocket, which sent men to the moon, stood 363 feet tall and weighed 6,400,000 pounds. A picture of the Apollo 11 rocket at launch can be found almost any place, to tell you the truth, and especially in all of the magazines that were published at the time. Anyone can obtain a photograph of the Apollo 11 rocket with little trouble. It was designed, ladies and gentlemen, to send a payload of approximately 100,000 pounds toward the moon at a velocity of 24,300 miles per hour. This is going to blow your mind, so you better strap yourself in your seat. The Apollo 4 rocket placed 278,699 pounds into the 110-mile-high circular orbit around the Earth. A much higher payload can be placed in orbit than can be sent to the moon because of the additional fuel and velocity needed to escape from the Earth. If the payload weight is divided into the total weight of the rocket, the payload ratio is determined. In the case of Apollo 4, this ratio equals 6,400,000 pounds divided by 278,699, or 23 to 1. This means that a launch weight of 23 times the payload was required to place the object into Earth orbit, and approximately 90% of the rocket's weight was fuel. If the moon had only 1/6 of the Earth's gravity, a much lower payload ratio than the above would have been needed by the lunar module to soft land or escape from the moon. NASA, of course, claimed that the lunar module, or LM as it was called, weighed 33,200 pounds when full of fuel. This comprised the ascent and descent stages. Since the loaded ascent stage weighed 10,600 pounds, and the empty descent stage weighed 4,500 pounds, the total payload for soft landing was 15,100 pounds. Therefore, the payload ratio for soft landing was 33,200 divided by 15,100, which comes out to 2.2 to 1. This loaded ascent stage supposedly weighed 10,600 pounds when full and 4,800 pounds when empty. The ascent payload ratio would then be 10,600 divided by 4,800, or 2.2 to 1. Also, the weights given, ladies and gentlemen, for the full and empty lunar module are consistent with the fuel requirements needed if the moon had only 1/6 gravity. Even the sizes of the tanks to hold the fuel are reasonable, hence the overall volume of the spacecraft fits the requirements for a low lunar gravity. But if the neutral point distance were 24,000 miles from the moon, then 1/6 gravity would be expected and the fuel requirements would have been met. The astronauts could have landed with the lunar module and taken off again, completing their moon exploration as planned. However, the 43,495-mile neutral point distance and its implication of a high lunar gravity remain. With the information that the moon's gravity must be at least 64% of Earth's, the lunar module fuel requirement was calculated, and this lunar gravity figure implies that the required payload ratio for landing and takeoff must be at least 7.2 to 1. The orbital velocity to be reached or braked is approximately twice what it would be under 1/6 gravity. This requires about 4 times as much braking or ascent fuel. The additional fuel requirements under a high lunar gravity become horrendous. First, the ascent stage would have to weigh 7.2 times the empty weight, or 34,560 pounds. Second, the fuel required to soft land the fully loaded ascent stage would increase the lunar module's total weight to approximately 250,000 pounds. Therefore, ladies and gentlemen, the lunar module would be nearly as large as the Titan II rocket, which weighed 330,000 pounds and was 103 feet tall. Do you get the implications? The lunar module supposedly weighed 33,200 pounds. Hence, its weight and volume would have to increase by more than a factor of 7. The startling conclusion is that if men really landed on the moon in high lunar gravity conditions, it was not done with rockets. Again, you must be reminded that a 43,495-mile neutral point distance implies a lunar gravity equal to 64% of Earth's. A 64% lunar gravity, in turn, requires a large rocket just to escape from the moon, let alone soft land the takeoff rocket in the first place. The problem becomes astounding if the moon has a gravity equal to Earth's, and evidence will be presented which suggests that this may actually be the case. And if it were, the payload ratio would have to be 18 to 2, and this would require an 87,360-pound ascent stage alone. The descent rocket would weigh a staggering 1,589,000 pounds, 1/4 the size of the Saturn launch rocket. The Saturn launch vehicle would then need to weigh 64 times this, or 101,700,000 pounds. This is about 16 times larger than it actually was. So when I told you a long time ago that the figures did not support a moon landing, and you sent all those silly letters to me without doing any research on your own, simply because somebody told you that they went to the moon and you watched this little drama on television, and of course, you pulled the wool down over your eyes, bawled a little bit, and went back to sleep. And I disturbed your sleep, didn't I? I woke you up. I began to make you think about it. And that bothered you. So without even checking, you began to write your letters. How silly. You see, these enigmas bring up some interesting questions. Why did the Russians apparently pull out of the space race when they were hot on the trail of putting a man on the moon and were way ahead of us, according to the newspapers and all of the scientists and all of the hoopla and all of propaganda and news releases. How did the United States succeed when rockets would clearly not work in the high lunar gravity conditions? What was the military's involvement in top secret research that led to the successful moon landings? Well, we'll try to answer that, but not tomorrow night, because we have received a copy of the ADL report on the militias, and also a report issued to law enforcement officers across the country on the militias by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and for the next two nights, that's what I'm going to be reading to you, so you'll know what they're saying about us, and so that you can act accordingly. It is important that if you have a racially mixed militia, you must make that apparent to the public. If you have a religiously mixed militia, that also must be made equally apparent to the public, and we'll discuss this and other things over the next two nights. But understand this. It's not just the moon, ladies and gentlemen. We've been lied to about everything that we've ever thought was true. And Pooh, I'll be home very shortly, baby, and I love you. And I love you too, Annie. And for the rest of you, good night, and God bless you all. These are the continuing broadcasts of the Hour of the Time. Our mission? To wake the sheeple, empower the people, and save freedom for the world.